Okay, Harry Potter fans, welcome back to Chatty Potter. Today we are joined by Summer, who is going to talk us through shifting, which is honestly not something I knew anything about before we spoke. We're then going to dive into the scenario of what if Umbridge remained headmistress after the Order of the Phoenix finished. So all through the rest of the series, how would that change things? It's a great episode. I love chatting to Summer. So here we go. Thank you so much for joining me, Summer, on Chatty Potter. Do you want to start by introducing yourself, who you are, what you do on the internet?
Yes, of course. I'm Summer. I go by Glam Gryffindor on TikTok. I make a lot of Harry Potter content, shifting content, and I'm sort of branching into other fandoms very, very slowly, but just looking to have a good time and make people laugh.
Lovely. And you do a great job of it. Like that filter where you pick out your mum, your dad, your Hogwarts house, those videos of yours, like, slay me. They're so funny.
Thank you.
Of course. So what other fandoms are you like dipping into?
Here's the thing. My fandoms, I feel like, are not super popular anymore because I like old stuff. I really like Indiana Jones. So I'm kind of wanting to put out some content about that, but I'm like, mm-hmm. not sure how it's going to be received. I like Stranger Things. I would like to do more in that world, but that also scares me a little bit just because of the way it has been on TikTok lately. So I'm really planning things out before I hit the post button.
Nice. I like the planning. I actually have never seen Indiana Jones. So I know, like, the 90s blockbusters, Indiana Jones, Jaws, Jurassic Park, like, it's totally over my head. Like, what? I just missed all of it. Like, we just didn't watch many movies as, like, when we were younger, apart from, like, the new movies that were, like, coming out, you know. So yeah, I just, like, skipped all of that stuff. So I will just keep an eye out for your indie content.
Yes, thank you. You can go back anytime, and, you know, hopefully it's something that makes you smile. Let's see.
I'm sure it will be. And you said Stranger Things, how things have been on TikTok is scaring you at the moment. Like, is there drama in the Stranger Things?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe it's just like my For You page, but there's been a lot of drama. Sorry if you can hear a helicopter.
No, that's
there's
okay.
A lot of drama surrounding, like, specifically the Eddie Munson character. But I think somebody on YouTube or TikTok was talking recently about how the fandom has sort of combined fan, like, nerd type of people and mainstream people. And I'm saying all this very loosely, but it's created such an interesting dynamic within the fandom, because you have people in it who are trying to embrace it and are the same people who would ridicule characters if they existed like this in real life.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah. I never looked at it with that dynamic.
It's fascinating. And I'm not here to, like, put anybody out to pasture, but it's just something where I think it's important to step back and see, just honestly, like, think before you hit post type of thing.
Okay. Interesting. Because I feel like there's probably degrees of that on every side of TikTok, but it certainly felt like there's been a lot of it in, like, the Harry Potter community on TikTok, like, multiple times, at least since I've been on the app, and probably long before as well. So
yeah.
I guess because Stranger Things goes away for such a long time and then just pops back, it's probably their first run of in the TikTok cycle, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Good point.
Mm. Okay, that's really cool. So just some quick fire questions to get to know sort of you before we get into our sort of main chat. What's your Hogwarts house?
Gryffindor.
Of course it is. Your username is Glam Gryffindor. Your favorite book from the Harry Potter series?
So this is a great question because I always go back and forth on it. It's either Goblet of Fire or Half-Blood Prince. And I lean more towards Goblet of Fire, but I don't want to. I want it to be Half-Blood Prince.
Oh, man. I was so excited for you to say the Half-Blood Prince because that is mine. And I think the Goblet of Fire is a great book, so I don't judge you too much, but it's not as good as the Half-Blood Prince, and it's not even close. But anyway, we'll move.
We'll move on. Oranges.
Yeah, you're right. They're very different. They're almost incomparable, I feel like, in what they offer the series.
Yes, but I think they actually serve the series in similar ways, just in that we get the most left out of those movies.
Yes. Oh, that's an interesting. Oh, I never thought of it like that. You think what we miss in the movies makes us hold the books dearer to us because it's not, like, brought to life.
Well, because you miss, like, the most important parts of, I think, those books in their film counterparts. So, you know, you have the entire explanation of why Voldemort is the way he is in
yes.
Half-Blood Prince. That is just completely left out of the films. And then in Goblet of Fire, you know, you don't have Spew. You just don't have like a number of things that make it so charming beyond the Triwizard Tournament.
You're so right. And I, like I say, I never looked at it like that. Like, I never looked at the, like, particularly the Half-Blood Prince as me loving it so much as a book because the film didn't deliver on so many bits. But maybe that is why I hold it so dear. Oh, you're absolutely right. That's so interesting. Okay, I'll let you have the Goblet of Fire because your reasoning was very valid. Which is your favorite movie then?
Prisoner of Azkaban.
Great shout. Very good one. Classic. What's your least favorite movie, just out of interest?
Order of the Phoenix. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
It's almost a chore to watch that movie. And I say that like with love, but it is hard to watch. When you're doing a marathon and Order of the Phoenix comes on, it's like, all right, let me strap in for the 5-minute montage of Dumbledore's army that I didn't need.
Oh my gosh. I feel like that about the Order of the Phoenix book. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is a struggle. Like, when it's good, it's really good. But there's so many times we just like, we could have dropped 100 pages here. We didn't need any of this stuff, like, at all. Like, okay, so I feel like most people say The Chamber of Secrets is their least favorite movie. You've caught me off
guard. I love Chamber of Secrets.
Do you really?
It's probably the one I go back and watch second most after Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh my God, that's so interesting.
It's still got that to it.
Yes, it does have the innocence. You're right. After what you said about strapping in and just forcing yourself to get through the Order of the Phoenix, though, like, The Chamber of Secrets is the longest movie, and I feel that way. I know everyone is shocked when I say that, but it is. And I feel like that about The Chamber of Secrets. I'm like, oh my gosh, just get to the point. This is one of the shortest books. Why are we strapping in for so long for this?
Interesting, yeah.
Huh, okay, okay.
Well, okay, in fairness, though, I really like Lucius Malfoy. I really like Jason Isaacs, and he's in Chamber of Secrets. So anytime he's on the screen, I'm like, great, I'm ready. Let's do this.
Yes, and he is great as Lucius Malfoy. I think that's such a solid casting. And like, if you see him out of costume, you wouldn't place it. Like, you wouldn't really put them together.
No, actually, when I was watching Sex Education, he's in, I think, the second season. Mm-hmm. And I had to do a double take because I was like, Lucius Malfoy? Sex Education? What?
Yes, I know. Okay, not casting judgment on any of your decisions at all, even though it probably sounds like I have done. I promise I haven't. Favorite character?
You know the answer to this, but I am very partial to Severus Snape. And it really does come back to the casting because I adore Alan Rickman so much. Mm-hmm. I think Snape is a fantastic character in terms of how he's written. And I understand why people don't like him. So I do see both sides of it. For me, it's like, I actually love seeing the contrast between how he's portrayed in the books versus the movies. I find that fascinating. And the first time I read the books in full, which was like in the last 2 years, I thought, oh, this is why people are not super into Snape. And if you're not like a huge movie person and you really just like the books, it makes total sense. But for me, I think he is so, like, you just never know what's going to come out of his mouth. And I love people like that in real life, too.
That's too chaotic for me in real life. But I feel like, yeah, you're right. Like, as a character, he is phenomenal. Like, he adds so much to the books in terms of, like, the uncertainty and the plot points and how many things can revolve around him. Excellent character. I think you're right. I think far more redeemable in the movies than in the books.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of an asshole in the books. And that's putting it lightly, I feel like. But I feel like people think that my dislike for him as a person, if he were real, seeps into my dislike for him as a character. I think he's a phenomenal character. I don't think the series would be half as good without him. But I think he's a terrible person, and I would very much distance myself from him if I knew him in real life.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And I think it's actually similar with Dumbledore. Yes. But it's like the kind of character you love to hate, at least for me with Dumbledore, because he is so well written and so morally gray. And those are the most interesting characters.
100%.
And I love to hate on Dumbledore. It's so much fun. So, you know, we take those characters and I think it's a sign of a well-written story and a well-written character when you do feel such strong emotions towards them, positive or negative.
100%. I could not agree more. Particularly with Dumbledore, and I've mentioned this in about maybe 15 of the 20 episodes of this podcast that I've done, so regular listeners will be very bored when I make the point again. But I see Dumbledore in the same light as, like, a person sees their parents, I feel like. Like, you grow up as a kid, and you think your parents are these godlike creatures who can do no wrong. And as you mature and you get older, you start to recognize, actually, they're people, and they make mistakes sometimes. And look, they're flawed. Look at this terrible thing they did. And that's sort of how I see Dumbledore. Like, the first time I read the series, I was like, what a wonderful man. Like, he is God, if God was a person. How brilliant. And then you read it again a bit older, and you're like, oh, he's very manipulative. Oh, this is awful. He's literally gaslighting a teenager. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. Wow. That's a fantastic point. Totally. Totally agree.
Thank you. Worth making 15 to 16 times in different podcasts,
people,
right?
People need to be reminded. Come on.
Exactly. Too many people getting back on the Dumbledore bandwagon. We need to knock them off.
No, and that's funny because a lot of the people that I talk to not online about Harry Potter are, like, very confused when I make an offhand comment about Dumbledore being the villain. And they're like, what do you mean he's the best? And I say, well, sit down. We got some.
How much time have you got?
Yeah, exactly.
100%. So one thing I wanted to talk about that is a regular thread woven throughout your content on TikTok is shifting. I don't really know what it is or what it's about. Or can you explain it to me like I'm, like, not even five, like I just learned how to understand language. Can you just explain it to me?
Yes, and I will do the best I can as somebody who does not claim to be a professional, but who has been studying this for a while.
Oh, sorry, is there professional people in this space?
I mean, I don't think anybody would refer to themselves as a professional, but, you know, the phrase master shifter gets thrown around quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
And I am somebody who has done a ton of work on manifestation and shifting and just kind of like understanding the subconscious mind. But the act of shifting is moving your consciousness to another reality. And this goes hand in hand with oftentimes the multiverse theory, which says there are infinite realities out there, infinite possibilities, everything from, yes, Hogwarts being a place to go and experience in 5D, all of your senses, or something as simple as you had cereal for breakfast this morning, but in another reality, you had a bagel. So
okay.
There are infinite possibilities out there. I hope I'm explaining it in simple enough terms.
I think so. So how I had it or misunderstood before was like a form of like lucid dreaming, where you just sort of like create this world in your dream and you can sort of navigate through it. But it's closer to like shifting realities, like multiverse jumping, is that right?
Yeah, it's very much more in line with quantum jumping than lucid dreaming. There are different levels to them, and I would never put the two of them in the same category, but they do share similar instances. And lucid dreaming is, in fact, like a way to get to shifting. But lucid dreaming, oftentimes you don't have the five senses, and it's a dream. Shifting is not actually a dream. So Though there are some very stark differences. And then there's another layer, which is astral projection, which is an entirely different thing. And the way I have come to understand it in all the work that I've done is lucid dreaming is dreaming, but you are aware you are dreaming. Astral projection is moving your astral body, your spiritual body, and separating it from your physical body. Whereas shifting is only moving your consciousness, so you go experience a different reality altogether that does exist on another plane, but you are not leaving any physical part of you behind.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, my gosh. That's so much. As someone who had no concept of any of this before, that is a lot to take in.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And like, so, sorry, the thing that threw me the most was when you said you're not asleep. It's not dreaming. You're
it's
like,
listening. No, you can do it while you're asleep, but you can also do it while you're awake. And
oh, wow. Okay.
Not something you can do while awake. I will claim to be an almost professional lucid dreamer because it's something that I have done pretty regularly for a long time now. But they're very different things. And while a lot of people lump them together and they do share similarities, they're just like entirely different facets of, I'm going to say, consciousness.
Right.
Yeah, it's fascinating and it's really wonderful and it's something that has changed my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not something I also go around advertising to people because they do look at you a little askew.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like any belief system, except if you say to someone, oh, I'm shifting to Hogwarts, they think you are crazy. But it's,
right.
You can fully understand that Hogwarts is a fictional place in this reality, but there is another where it is not. And you can go experience it and you can have moments with your favorite characters and live out a full life.
Oh, wow. Okay. And is it exclusively Hogwarts that you like shift to, or if you like, you jump to like other places? Is jumped to the right terminology?
Jump to is fine because it comes back to quantum jumping, which is again, just like kind of a subcategory of quantum physics, but, and so is manifestation and like other things that would fall under that umbrella. But the idea of the multiverse theory, and that's the one that I subscribe to at least, says that you can go and be and do anywhere and anyone. And so Indiana Jones is like some place that I would love to go sometime. And Hogwarts is an extremely popular place for shifters to want to shift to. And then Stranger Things is one that personally I'm not planning on going to, but a lot of people have, and they are. And it's even something as simple as, well, you had a hard week at work, you want to go shift to a beach, go for it and relax and like take some time there and then come back.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. I could do with going to, and is it easy to learn? Like if I was like, right, I'm sold, Summer, I want to jump into shifting. Could I in theory do it within the next couple of weeks, or it takes a long time to like master it?
It depends on who you are and I think what information you consume in regards to like how to learn how to do it. And I would never discourage anyone and say, no, it's a really hard thing, because it all does come down to beliefs. And for me, like, yes, it's taken me a very long time. And for some of my friends, it's taken a month or two. And other people I've seen, oh, it took me 3 weeks or 4 days. So it's a very personalized thing. And something in the shifting community that we often talk about is that it's a really personal journey and you can't be comparing yourself to other people doing it. But if you wanted to jump into it, I would say, yeah, go for it. Let me know how it works. And hopefully it's super quick for you.
Amazing. I'm definitely going to at least take a look at how one might start and see if it's something I can feasibly try.
Yeah, for sure.
So you've shifted to Hogwarts. What's like the best experience you've had while you've been there? Well, first of all, what's it like in general? And then tell me about like your best experiences.
So I haven't been able to like live out my Hogwarts dreams as of yet. The closest I've gotten to my full Hogwarts DR that I have scripted is an attic that I still have trouble placing exactly where it was, but there is a Snape mannequin that is in the corner, like the upper right corner. I was facing this way. And there's a door that I decided not to go through because I had no idea where I was. And then I do think I've been to a version of Grimmauld Place, but these are things that for me have only happened for a few seconds. With that said, I have some very close friends who have scripted me into their realities, and the things that they have told me I have done and people I've been with and had the pleasure of like experiencing in those realities is absolutely phenomenal and like very overwhelming at times.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and it's a great thing, but it's like such a personal journey and it has been so up and down for me, especially lately, just like, you know, almost 2 years into it. And there's a very specific time and place that I want to get to. Like my script has been done for a long time. And it's difficult for me, but I'm working on making it not difficult for
me. Yeah. And sorry, when you say scripting, like you write out what you want to do, or does scripting have a different like meaning in this context?
Yeah. I mean, you write out certain things that you would like to happen. You can write, hi, my name is Summer. I am however many years old. This is my Hogwarts house. And for someone like me, if I were going to go to Hogwarts as a student, I would be aging everybody up. So I would just be selecting really a reality where they aren't between the ages of 11 and 17. I would probably select a reality where they're between 18 and 25 or something to that effect. That's not actually what my script is, but you can list out all the different aspects you would like. And really all you're doing with that intention is selecting the reality, the version of that that exists. So you're not creating it within your own mind.
Okay. Oh my goodness. This is so interesting. And there are skeptics, right? Am I right in thinking there are like, you guys get like quite a hard time, like as a community?
Yeah, there are straight up haters. And like skepticism, I think, is a very healthy thing. I had it at the beginning. But I've also done enough work to where it makes sense to me and it fits with my belief system. And I would never force anybody else to believe what I believe. But it's the same as any other religion, I think, or any other spiritual practice where it's like, oh, that works for you. That's great. But the shifting community, I've noticed, especially lately, is getting a lot more of what you just call anti-shifters, saying, you know, you're crazy, you're dreaming, you're this, you're that. It's like, it really doesn't affect anybody else's life, does it?
Yeah. No, not at all. That's, I mean, you know, you guys do you, right? Somebody on this podcast before said, don't yuck other people's yum. And it's like stuck with me. And I feel like it's very fitting here.
Yes. Yes. I love that phrase. I'm going to start using that.
100%. Although I have since started using it. And a lot of people have been like, that's such a weird way of phrasing it. I feel like in like general conversation, when I don't preface it with somebody on my podcast said this, and I'm just using it in context. Okay. Like, it's such a, why are you just telling me not to yuck yums? Like, what's going on?
I would never yuck somebody else's yum.
No, good. Nor should you. So if you haven't quite made it to Hogwarts yet, do you have like a best, and I won't quiz you about shifting for hours, I promise. We will move on from this shortly. Do you have like a best shift that you can like, I don't know if I'm even phrasing that correctly. Your best shift?
No, that sort of makes sense. It's hard to say. One of my best experiences, so for me, at least, sometimes when I lucid dream, I do have the five senses, not super strongly as you would have in this world if you were shifting. But I have had an experience where I had a couple of the senses in a muted way, and I was sitting there with Remus, and I just like tugged on his coat a little, and he was wearing like a corduroy type of blazer. And I was like, oh my God, I think I shifted. And I thought, I have to tell everybody about this when I go back. And as soon as I woke up, I realized, no, you didn't shift. You had an extremely vivid lucid dream there. That was great. But it was really nice to be just in Remus's presence for a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I have had a couple of those experiences where, and I think a lot of people actually do this and don't realize it. You think you shift because you have senses, but then it turns out you didn't. And I think some people, I'm never going to name names, but it's an easy thing to mistake because it's so exciting in that moment. But I feel like when you know, you'll know.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you may not want to relive it if you do. Have you had like a worst experience with it? Do you have like, again, forgive my naivety. Do you have like really bad shit? If you get hurt or like, you know, worse in a shifting environment, like can that impact you here, or would you just sort of like come back around, or like how does that work?
Yeah, so as shifting is only moving your consciousness and your essentially your mind, it doesn't impact your body here at all. Mm-hmm. So you could shift to Hogwarts and fight in the Battle of Hogwarts, and you could get very badly injured in your reality there. When you come back here, you'll be completely fine. However, you do, because it's all up here, you will have trauma from that. You will still have like mental ramifications of that. And it's a memory. So you can still remember everything, which is something that I think causes a lot of people to be hesitant, because if you're shifting to a reality where things are very dangerous and maybe very violent, like that could be extremely traumatizing. That's not something I'm planning on doing. And
no, that's why you're staying away from Stranger Things, I presume.
Yeah. And the Hogwarts script has like, Voldemort is dead, I can never be killed, you know, like different things like that. But yes, the only things that you would bring back from that would be mental. And that can be very difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I know one time, and it's only been for a few seconds, but one time I did end up in a hospital room with a very scary looking nurse, and I got out of there as quick as I could.
Mm.
So I said my safe word and I just ended up back here.
Oh my gosh, yeah, no, that sounds terrifying. Yeah. And this will be my last question about it, I promise. Can you get stuck?
No.
Like, you can't?
No, okay. No, you can't. And I'm actually really glad you asked that, because going back to the safe word thing, you script, you have a safe word. And for me, I know every time that I have mini shifted or shifted for a few seconds to an odd place, I say my safe word and I wake up here. When I've been dreaming or lucid dreaming and something goes haywire and I say my safe word, I don't just wake up back here. When you're shifting, all you need is intention to come back here. And you'll always kind of be tethered to this reality. So there's no fear of not being able to see your loved ones here ever again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know. Yeah. Cool. I mean, that was enlightening. I feel like I said, I've touched upon the very limited little bits of information about shifting that have like leaked through, mostly from guests on the podcast, really, who have like touched upon it, but aren't that deep into it. So it's so interesting to hear a more sort of in-depth account of it. Definitely can look into it more.
Asking, because I mean, it crossed my mind before we got on, oh, maybe he'll say something about shifting. And then I thought, nah, that would make me so nervous. And then.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
No. And the only reason it would make me nervous is because I wouldn't want somebody to react in a negative way. And mm-hmm. I would, of course, for any shifters watching this, want to feel like I'm explaining it in a justifiable way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel very comfortable. So thank you for having an open mind.
No, yeah, no, of course. I mean, it sounds amazing. And like we said, I'd never yuck anybody's yum, even if it wasn't my cup of tea. Like, it, like you say, who's it hurting? Like you guys, you crack on. speaking of sort of your multiverse theory of multiple realities, I'm quickly plugging my own YouTube channel, youtube.com/Brett's Thoughts, where I have been doing a series of Harry Potter what if videos. For example, what if Ron Weasley died at the end of the Philosopher's Stone in the chess match? How would that impact the rest of the series? What if Harry decided to give Voldemort the Philosopher's Stone and join him at the end of the Philosopher's Stone? What if Neville was the chosen one, for example? And I thought it could be fun for us to jump into a what if scenario that I've come up with the premise, and then we can just like flesh out a little bit.
Okay, let's do it.
maybe you can shift to this reality if it ends up good.
Listen, I might at this point.
Okay. You'll have to let me know how it goes if you do. Although you may not want to when I give you the premise. What if Dolores Umbridge, after she is placed as headmistress once Dumbledore is removed in the Order of the Phoenix, what if she stayed as headmistress for the rest of the series? How do we think that impacts things?
So, the first thing I want to say to this is that I have seen Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. So I think
Have
a little bit of insight into how technically, canonically that would go.
And is that part of the Cursed Child?
Oh, yes. I don't want to spoil anything, but mm-hmm. it is certainly touched upon. It is actually kind of a major thread. Oh my gosh.
I thought I was being so genius and original with this what if scenario.
No, you are. Don't discredit yourself. This is a great question. And I think a lot of people haven't seen Cursed Child.
Mm-hmm.
And I also saw it a while ago, so I don't remember everything. But I think a dark cloud would be hanging over Hogwarts the entire time.
100%. Yes. It'd be a horrible atmosphere.
Yes. I think the uniforms would be muted. I just feel like she would change everything to the point where everybody kind of like looks the same. And you know what I think it would give?
Mm-hmm.
I hope I don't get sued for this, but like Disney, like being a Disney employee where everything has to be just so.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Like it's very like guidelines, regulations. You have to do everything exactly right.
Allegedly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'd see a lot less individuality among all of our favorite characters, especially across the different houses, which are obviously known for having very different values and like reacting to situations in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she would take like her strictness to just the nth degree.
Yes, I think you're right. I think what we see her sort of implement in Defense Against the Dark Arts, where there's no wand waving, it's all theoretical.
Yeah.
Just across the board, no potion making, you just learn about them from the book.
Yeah.
You don't do the charms, you don't fly a broom, you just learn how you would fly a broom. Like,
oh, awful.
Oh, horrible. Absolutely. I also think, I think she'd permanently look to be removing people like McGonagall and Hagrid, like Dumbledore's like key supporters, right?
Yeah, for sure. Ooh. And I mean, I can't imagine Hogwarts without McGonagall. She is so often the only voice of reason in that entire school.
Yeah, 100%.
That's a frightening thought. Yeah, and I think McGonagall is Umbridge's like worst nightmare too. It's not Dumbledore. I think it's McGonagall.
Mm-hmm.
So she would definitely be expelling her from the grounds, completely banishing her. I mean, we saw it almost happen with Trelawney. So just imagine if Umbridge had unlimited power.
And the backing of the ministry with that.
Forget it. Absolutely not. Now, I have to say, she does have a certain sense like of taste that I don't completely disagree with, just in terms of like how much she loves pink, how much she loves cats. I also love pink and cats.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought we were going to get into like how much she loves like torturing children in her office and stuff.
No, I'm off that. I've been off that for a while.
Okay. Well, congratulations. I'm glad you've been able to progress.
And for legal reasons, that is a joke.
I like that. Speaking of torturing children in her office, Harry's getting expelled, right, at the earliest opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a huge threat to her, obviously. I think she would do anything similar to how Voldemort was trying to isolate Harry. I think she would be looking to isolate students as much as she can, because their strength in numbers. And if they can't get together, if they can't do Dumbledore's army or anything like that, then she's got a lot more power to wield.
Do you think Dumbledore's army would stay like covertly meeting up even after Harry's been expelled?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, they're just unstoppable. I mean, people like Luna, Neville, Hermione, Ron, et cetera, like they'll do whatever they want. if the books have showed up one thing, it's that they can't be told no. But I wonder how those meetings would go in that case.
Yeah, I mean, it would presume, I guess, the Order of the Phoenix, they found the Room of Requirement, so they couldn't meet in the Room of Requirement anymore. So like, where would they meet? How would they do it like secretly?
Right, and if they're going to leave the castle, how are they going to do that? Maybe the One-Eyed Witch passageway? I don't know, maybe Honeydukes is the new spot?
Oh my gosh, yes, the basement of Honeydukes, just having these like weekly meetings.
Wait, I like this idea. And, you know, they have access to unlimited snacks, so that's perfect.
Yes, oh my gosh, love that. Also, like, I feel like this brings me onto something that I feel very passionately about, which is that we need a side-along book of the Deathly Hallows, which tells us about, like, Neville, Ginny, and Luna, like, starting their rebellion in Hogwarts.
I think one of the wonderful things about Harry Potter is that we do crave these extra stories on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can't be said for a lot of other series, where you're just dying to know what is going on at the same time. And obviously, like, people want a Marauders series, and they've done Fantastic Beasts. And, like, what you're speaking to, I think anybody would read that in a heartbeat.
100%, yes. And, like, we're very lucky to have a very active fanfic, like, part of the community as well, right? So I'm sure that fanfic has been written.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, almost certainly. I just, you know, I've not dived into fanfic too much. I don't know about you. Like, I just haven't... I struggle to get through, like, the books on my TBR list already, like, let alone that if I open the gates to fan fiction, like, that's it. I'm never leaving like my house. I'm just gonna be reading forever.
Yeah, you could just be a hermit and then be constantly reading fan fiction all the time, which is, I'm sure, like, a lifestyle for some people, so I'm not yucking their yum. But for me, I don't know, like, if I'm really allowed to say this on here, if I do read fan fiction, it's just a one-off, and it's YN and Professor Snape, or YN and Lucius Malfoy.
Sorry, what's YN?
It's your name, so it's Y/N, and basically it inserts you into the fanfic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so those are the ones that I prefer, but I haven't really sat down and gone through as far as, ooh, I want to read this aspect of the story and really dive into it for the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But I also just don't like reading on a computer screen. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I like, I have a Kindle, but I much prefer reading from a page than from my screen. Like, it's just so hard to get into.
Yes, totally agree. And I feel like that's probably the popular opinion.
I think so. Like, I love the convenience of it. Like, if I'm going on holiday and I don't have to pack 7 books in my suitcase, I can just pack my, like, my tablet. Like, yeah. Yes, here for it. It's just, I don't know, man. I just romanticize that, like, having a coffee, curling up in the corner, like, turning the page, the smell of a brand new book. Like, for me, nothing comes close.
New book smell, especially in autumn, and you have your little, like, wax, in my case, you have a wax melt going. You have the cat, you're just petting the cat. It's, yes.
Oh my gosh, very, what a dream.
Size.
Love that. Love that. Just quickly to revisit our what if scenario that we have gone on tangents from. Dumbledore would probably be in hiding the entire rest of the series, which sort of begs the question, if Harry doesn't have those private lessons with him in the Half-Blood Prince, does he ever learn about the Horcruxes? And then is he able to ever defeat Voldemort, do you think?
So that's a great question. I think for the sake of the prophecy, he has to defeat, yes, Voldemort. And I think that the Horcruxes are the means to the end. But so whatever the way is that he learns about the Horcruxes, he will have to do that, even if it's not looking into the Pensieve with Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how that would go. You know what? Knowing Harry, I feel like he would accidentally come across a Horcrux similar to the diary,
yeah,
and end up destroying it. And then Voldemort is a little bit weaker. We cut to Voldemort inside Malfoy Manor, and he's like, oh, my chest!
You know? Just heartburn, like, he thinks.
Yeah. So, and as a comedy writer, too, like, I see it in my head very differently, where Voldemort is like a comic relief character in my mind.
Oh, so, my gosh, I love that.
Yeah. And I think he's actually painted that way in quite a number of, I say fan fictions, but just like fan-made media.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. You take a look at Potter Puppet Pals and it's like, well, that's not, yes, that's not scary. Well, I think because Harry is the way he is and so oblivious to everything, that he would accidentally destroy the Horcruxes and all would be well.
Yes, I love that. You know what? I love the end of a what if where it's just like, and accidentally the good guys win. Like, yeah. I am here for it.
A little bit ex machina.
Yes, I mean, I hate that plot device so much, but one, you know what, there's that's another reason why the Chamber of Secrets really pisses me off, like, because I feel like there is a deus ex machina in that Harry's like backs against the wall, he's about to be attacked by this basilisk, he's alone in the Chamber of Secrets, Ginny's dying, there's no way out, and then suddenly, oh, a phoenix and a hat carrying a sword, like, do you know what I mean? It just feels a bit lazy.
I understand. Yeah, I get that.
Not to yuck your yum. I know you love it, and I don't want to convince you otherwise.
You're totally not yucking my yum. Yucking my yum. But I think when you're watching it as a kid, and it is that moment in narrative and cinematic writing that's like, all hope is lost. What's going to happen next? It just makes your heart soar, or at least it does for me. As an adult, it's so much easier to critique.
Yes.
But even now watching it, I'm like, yeah, Fox did it.
No, you're right. It's especially like, because you have to give the earlier ones leeway for being like so far into the realm of being like a children's book. Like, that kind of plot device makes more sense. And I feel like I'm criticizing it with the later books in mind, probably, or right, just more adult media. But yeah, you know, that is, I remember when it was actually the first Harry Potter film that I saw at the cinema, and my older sister took me and my brother, and I was so young, and she started like, she basically, after Fawkes comes along and they defeat the basilisk, my sister starts clapping. You know how they clap when like the plane lands and you're just like,
yeah,
like, I'm not one of those people. My sister just starts clapping. She's quite a lot older than me. And then people just around us in the cinema started joining in with the clapping, and I was like, holy shit, this is actually like, this is kind of a cool moment.
Yes, and it's also that moment of like such community, especially when you're in a theater, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing that she was a trendsetter, okay?
100%, 100%, yes. Wow. And, like, I feel like the only thing close to that now is, like, if you go to, like, a Marvel movie, like, opening night and the cameo, like, Spider-Man, the new one. I don't know if you're, like, big into Marvel, but, like...
I'm not.
Oh, well, the latest Spider-Man had moments like that, but we can slide right past it.
No, I respect people who like Marvel. It's just, like, I can't get into it. It's never been my thing.
And I feel like you've sort of missed... You've missed the boat with it now too, because there's just so, if you wanted to catch up, there's so much. There's so much to go back through.
There's so much. And I don't have the time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, anything that brings people together is great in my book for a good reason, of course. Because I think that's something that's really lacking these days. And I think mm-hmm. that's probably part of the reason I fell so deeply in love with the Harry Potter community on TikTok, the shifting community, what have you, because it's just like, it's community, quite literally.
Yes. Yes, yes. I adore this. Like, I've been part of, on and off, so many different communities online, and I feel like this community that I found on TikTok now through, like, this Harry Potter content is, like, it's such a supportive, and there's a non-supportive side of it as well, don't get me wrong, but it's such, the community I'm lucky enough to be a part of is very supportive and loving and props everybody up and encouraging, and, like, I adore that. It's irreplaceable, honestly.
Oh, that makes my heart so happy.
These questions, as we wrap up, may not make your heart so happy. I have some quite difficult talking points for you.
Right.
So, first question. Forget Dolores Umbridge being headmistress. You're in charge of Hogwarts. And the governors have told you have to cut an entire house from the school. You have to eliminate an entire house. Which house are you picking?
I hate to say this, but I think Slytherin. I'm sorry.
My poor Slytherin heart.
Listen, the reason I say that is because obviously I don't want to cut anybody, but the other three houses I think are so necessary to having a functioning society.
Yeah.
And Slytherin, you know, if you got to get knocked down a peg, you're still going to fight your way back up. Because if I cut Slytherin house, they are the ones who are going to say, well, I'll show her. And then they will climb back up to the top. So there's
playing on the ambition and the pride thing.
Heck yeah. And I mean, Ravenclaws, you need to have people who are creative and have that unique perspective, like out in the world to make it a better place. I can't say Gryffindor because it's my own house and I'm extremely partial. And I think with Hufflepuff, most of them at least are like decent people who, again, are like working to be good and like do good for others and are extremely loyal, and you need those people out in the world functioning as well.
Okay. Isn't Zachariah Smith a Hufflepuff? He's like the worst character in the, I hate him so much. But besides him, yes, you are right about Hufflepuffs being good people. Besides a few Hufflepuffs I know in sort of in real life, but it's fine. But yeah, you know what, I love asking that question because I get such a plethora of different explanations as to why. And I actually love that use of like the ambition and the pride and like flipping that negative into a positive for the Slytherins. I'll take it. I'm happy to be cut now. Like, cream rises to the top, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're set for life. They're good.
Okay, because a lot of people who pick Slytherin just pick it because it's the evil house. So I feel like it's a nice way around it. I really like that, Summer. That's great.
Thank you.
Okay, so you've been headmistress of Hogwarts. You are magic, but you can only do one spell for the rest of your life. Which spell are you picking?
So now I have a follow-up to this, which is, are there Death Eaters? Is there like imminent danger? Because that's going to change my answer.
Well, so ordinarily I ask this question as like you living your life as you are now in this muggle world, but you can bring one spell to your life for you.
Well, then Accio. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people pick that. Answer.
Because who wants to get up? Who wants to stand? Who wants to the other side of the room to grab something? Not me. Mm-hmm.
No.
So I think that's the most convenient. I think it just makes the most sense for muggles, honestly, in the muggle world.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting is you're right, that is the most common answer. But people who answer Accio to that question fall into two camps. And one is your camp, the sort of the laziness camp, who just don't want to get up. Not to call you a lazy person, but if your reasoning is, I don't want to get up, like, I feel like that's the camp you fall into. But the other camp is disorganized people. Like, some people just can't be bothered getting stuff. Other people are like, I lose stuff all the time. It would help me find it. And again, I would be in the lazy camp. And I was like, my mind was blown when people started saying, I lose things. So it would just help me find them.
Yeah, I never would have thought of that. And as somebody who lives in like organized chaos, it does make sense.
So you take Akio like twice over. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, final question. You can get a tattoo that's magical in the same way that the portraits are magical, so they move around. What moving tattoo are you going to get?
Wow. See, this is a question I have never, ever thought of the answer to. This is a really great question.
Thank you.
Gosh, you know, you want it to be something like meaningful, but I might just get like buckbeak flying around on my back or something.
Love that.
You know, and yes. Maybe like with Harry and Hermione and Sirius Black on his back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just something that would be like fun to look at. And obviously since like Prisoner of Azkaban is so near and dear to my heart, so maybe yeah. Something like that.
I feel like that could be really meaningful too, right? Like saving two innocent lives. Like I feel like there's some depth to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like the way you, yeah. I like how you think. Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, I love that tattoo. Great answers. What a wonderful podcast guest you've been. Thank you so much, Summer, for joining me. Is there anything you want to plug just before we dip out?
Just follow me on TikTok, Glam Gryffindor, and thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
Of course. No, it's been an honor talking to you. And if you'd be interested in coming back for another episode in the future, I would love to have you.
Heck yeah, anytime.